Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the podcast. Today we are speaking to a very special guest in Andrew Dobby. Now, Andrew Dobby is the CEO and founder of the Made Brave Creative Agency. And in this podcast, we talk about marketing, everything to do with marketing, how to build a successful campaign, how to go viral on social media, how to build a social media following and presence, and all the rest of it. Honestly, this was a really amazing interview or podcast in terms of self-development, especially if you're an entrepreneur looking to start a business. And interestingly enough, literally as we were filming this podcast, James McAvoy went into the offices of Made Brave to chat to them, which is honestly awesome. James McAvoy is such a cool guy. Before we start this podcast, if you could do me a huge favor and hit that like button, subscribe button, whatever it is, wherever you are, I'd really appreciate it. It honestly helps more than you know, and the more likes and subscribers that we get, the more incredible guests we can get in. My name is Harrison Brown, and this is the Into the Mind podcast. If you're watching or listening, I hope this helps. I suppose the marketing sort of more creative agency, did that just come because that's what you enjoyed? Like, was that the thing that passed time the fastest for you, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's definitely progressed. Like, if I rewind, so Made Brave's now 12 years or 13 years old, actually, now. And like at the very beginning, because I was a graphic designer, I sort of built out a design team first. Mm-hmm. And then people would start asking for things that I couldn't do, right? So to give you a practical example of that, I always looked at other agencies and thought, right, well, if I'm going to create something different here, I'm going to not just do great work, right? Because that has to be a given. And it's the same as building any business, any brand, right? The product or the service has to be amazing. And I looked at it and I went, I'm going to grow an amazing brand. And so in the early days, I said to a creative director, the studio is yours. I want you to look after the creative work for the clients. Not that I wasn't interested in that. It was like, I was aware that I wouldn't be able to grow a business if I was in the day to day.
Right.
And so I had a creative director take that. And my job, I said, look, my job is now to grow a world-class brand. Mm. And then that made me think, right, well, everything I do now is to create that brand. And then I thought another way, if I can do that, and sort of, if you imagine a Venn diagram, the three circles.
Oh, yeah.
I thought great work, if I could create an amazing culture and then create a great brand, it would sort of self-fulfill.
Yeah.
I don't remember why I started the story.
I think it was explaining how you kind of like hired the people around you and how you got to the level you are now. Back then, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was just checking if you were listening. So,
Annabelle's playing a crossword puzzle.
So I think that the idea being, right, that if you're going like to grow a business, you've got to be doing all of these things at once.
Yeah.
And that was the only way that I would then grow something that would be bigger than the service offering.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where it started in the early days. And
And how did you feel about, like, I know that with me in particular, giving up control can be difficult.
Yeah.
Especially, I think photographers and videographers are a little bit OCD and like perhaps, and I say this being one, a little bit reclusive. Like, yeah. I quite like my own space. I'm a bit more introverted and I'm a little bit odd. But I definitely have more OCD when it comes to projects, like, because I like doing them my way. And if anyone does it the wrong way, then it's the wrong way. How did you find about giving up the creative control to the team?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a tough thing for people to do. And it's often why a lot of creative businesses don't scale, because a lot of creative businesses like mine are they're founded by the creative person, because it's founded off of some talent of some sort or a skill set. And then they usually get paralyzed at a certain size because they don't want to let go of the creative director title or that control in the job. And then if you do that, it's kind of hard because you've got all these other things that need to happen. So either you need to hire someone above you and be able to do that, or you need to remove yourself. And so, yeah, I found it really difficult at the beginning because I do like the attention to detail and everything, and I believe that's how you do get great work. But I've also, like, I'm so interested in culture and leadership and human beings to sort of thrive. They need autonomy, they need purpose, they need mastery. Mm. And I realized that if I'm going to be in over everyone's shoulder, then no one else is going to have that feeling. So I've always done my best to kind of build a team below me that have all of those things. And one of the best things someone said to me early on in my career is that if you're leading a business, you should have a blank desk, an empty desk. And it sounds terrible, right? Mm. Oh, you've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
But if you imagine, if you kind of work from that, if anything lands in the business on front of me, there should be a better version of me, or a better version in every single role in the business.
Yeah, yeah.
So if there's something operational, I should have a better operational person, marketing person, design, you know.
Yeah.
And then my job is to lead the business, be able to set a clear vision, and then everyone else is really fulfilled in their roles because they get to own those places. Now, it's not always easy, and there'll be some people listening to this that are in their first year, they're like, yeah, right, I'm never going to have an empty desk. And, like, I'm doing marketing and cleaning the toilets and making tea and doing all that. But that's okay. And I think what you need to do is almost like write a list of all the things you're doing.
Mm.
And then write a second list of what you want to be doing. So sort of design your dream job.
Mm.
And then slowly but surely, that's how you make your next hires. Because you go, well, I can peel off that piece and that piece and that piece until you've only left with the bits you want.
Yeah. And was there a point during the developmental stage, like the kind of the beginning, where you were going quite fast? I know that, you know, was it 6 to 13 in a year?
Six people in the first year, but 16 by year 2.
16. Yeah. You've gone up by 10 employees. Like, that's... That is a big number, and to manage, that's really quite difficult.
I mean, so it was pure naivety. I didn't know how to read a balance sheet, profit and loss. Mm. I was like, we're doing really well. And then my bookkeeper was like, you do realize that VAT isn't ours, that we have to get out. I was like, oh, right. But
strip off 40%.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I think you've kind of almost got to have that naivety at the beginning, because if you knew everything that you were going to get into, you probably wouldn't do it. And I think it's also important to say that running a business is not for everyone either. And because I think there's a pressure in today's world where everyone feels they have to be an entrepreneur. And I think it's a really stressful job as well. Like, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that, you know, no one realizes. Lots of stressful times that you can't, you know, you don't often get to talk about. And I like to talk about it because I think it's important for people to hear it. Because for some people, it's okay to be a freelancer. For some people, it's okay to be employed and have a job. It's just like there's a different spot for each of us that's right for our heart and our kind of makeup of our mind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, some people just respond to direction really, really well.
Absolutely.
And they need that person that's in front of them to say, oh, you know, great job, you did amazing here. And then you've made their day, you've made their week.
Yeah.
But like other people, I mean, just speaking from personal experience, I couldn't take direction. Like, I wanted to go my own way.
I can tell that already. Troublemaker.
that's the way that, like, some people are that way. Some people kind of... I would cheat when I did my homework in school, whereas other people wouldn't.
I also thought that as well.
That was the kind of person. Did you, in the infancy kind of stage, in that kind of the growth spurt, was there any time that you thought, shit, this is not good? Like, is there any key moment that you can think that, like, could have almost brought the company to its knees, or is there any sort of particularly, talk me through some post-traumatic stress that you have.
I've got so much. We could like do hours on this. I've got like, there's loads, because it's like there's constantly stuff. You're constantly
firefighting,
cutting battles, and it almost never goes away. There's like, you know, when you think you've seen everything, there's another thing. I'm trying to think of a good practical example. I think I remember in the early days, Finn was still young. I was going home at night, sleepless nights, holding the baby. I was literally having stress headaches because like the volume of learning everything all at once,
sleep,
trying to do the work, everything. And I was like, I was so stressed, but we had all this momentum, you know, it was all really picking up, and I was like, we're on something here. And I walked into the office and I just like spent all this money on about 20, 27 inch iMacs. They're all lined up beautifully. And the roof... The roof had burst open and it was just like raining on them all. And I just remember sort of going, because I was like, all these other things, and my hairs on my arms stood up.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to go home. And I just went home and I said to my wife, Pam, I was like, I just need to go to my bed. Please let me go to my bed. And I just lay in a bed for like 12 hours, just like, dunk. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that is just not what you want.
No, it's not what you want. No.
That's like a brick landing in your new car and just flattening it. And did that, so I'm guessing that situation, did you manage to, did you buy it all through the company and then it wasn't insured or how?
Yeah, I can't even remember now. I think, we somehow get through these moments, you know, and we got through it. And I think the trick is you've got to try and separate some of this stuff, like, and let yourself sleep and let yourself have breaks. And I think one of the things I did maybe 2 or 3 years into my business, which was one of the best pieces of advice I could give anyone starting a business, is to try and create boundaries. So like, I never wanted to be the dad that missed weekends or missed nights with Finn. And so like quite soon into my journey, it's, you know, in the creative agency world, it's quite normal that businesses run into the night and have pizzas. And I just like, I was like, I don't want that. It made Brave. So like I said, after 6 at night, we're not going to do that, first of all, where we can avoid it. Sometimes it happens, very, very rarely, right? But the norm shouldn't be that. And then what I'm not going to do as well is read emails at night. It's the best thing you can ever do, right? Because you know what happens is if someone wants to get something off of their shoulders, like they want to hand their notice in or they want to cancel something or do something, right? They will do it on a Friday night at the end of the day because you know why? Because they want to go into the weekend and have a great weekend, right? With it off, I've done it. Ah.
Yeah.
If you catch that email on Friday night, 6 o'clock, what do? You start like you're not present for your family, you're not present for your friends, your mind's in anxiety, you lay awake all night, you don't sleep, and you can't do anything about it until Monday morning. So if you just don't do that, and then read the email at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, you go, great, cool, that's shit, but I'm going to go and deal with it, and I can deal with it right now, so.
Yeah, I think that's part of the anxiety around emails, social media, like it has to be dealt with now. Like that, people's perception is that they need to deal with this now. Everything needs done now.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, actually, you can probably just leave it. It's not going to make a difference if you hadn't seen it until the Monday.
Yeah.
What did you find the most difficult bit about managing people? Like, do you think it was the bit about giving up control, or do you think it was that, you know, some people resign or dealing with HR issues? Like, because as the CEO, you need to, especially at the beginning, be involved in everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can't be involved in because without you, it doesn't grow.
Yeah.
What was the most difficult bit?
Yeah, I think for me personally, like, I hate conflict. Like, so I've never, like, growing up, I've never been the kind of person, you know, like some people try drama and they have loads of drama. Like, that's not for me. I've always been like friends with everyone, don't want to fall out with people. So I'll not create situations like that. Like, I'm not a gossiper. I'm not like, you know, I don't create these situations. I try my best not to.
Yeah.
And then, but then when you're in a business, situations come to you and you are there's no avoiding them. And then that means you have to deal with conflict. And so I found that quite hard to get my head around. But again, kind of to that empty desk thing, another thing that's kind of I've tried to use is that we're not all going to be great at everything. And I like to talk about that we've all got a superpower and we've got a kryptonite. And so that's one of my kryptonites, right? That I'm not great with that conflict. It emotionally kind of hurts me and I find it hard to deal with, etc. I'm also not great at process operations, but I have an operations director, Stephen, who is, we are like yin and yang.
Yeah.
So like I'm great at ideas. Is that the dog?
The dog snoring. His mouse.
So like you almost need to, like, if you imagine what your superpower is, like lean into that. So I know I'm good at creativity. I know, like, I can set a vision. I can hopefully like bring people on a journey. I'm good at ideas. And I know I'm terrible at those other things, but don't be shy of that. And then what you want to try and do is find people around you again that counterbalance. So my ops director, Stephen, who's been who's now a director in the business, he's the polar opposite, right? So I always say he's got like 1 in 5 good ideas, right? So I'm like, get past the 4 bad ones, get the good one. Great. But we joke about that. But you know what? He is amazing at operations and finance. So then I don't have to worry about that. He's also great with structure in terms of HR. And then I've got the most amazing HR head of people and culture, Melissa, who I just like trust explicitly.
Yeah.
They've got it. And then they trust that I'm going to hopefully set us off in the right direction, etc. So.
Yeah. So it all works in kind of tandem with each other.
Yeah.
So how did it... I found it very difficult to find people that I trust enough to promote them that... Like, how long did you work with those people until you put them into that position?
Yeah. Another great questioning it is, because it's tough, isn't it, right? Because I remember at the very beginning, because the people at the very beginning of business will not be always be the people that continue right the way through. And that's because sometimes, like at the very beginning, I almost had to hire clones of me, right?
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I need another person that can design like I design or do that job like that. But then that's not great, right? Because you end up like a bunch of Andrew Dobies is going to be a disaster.
Knocking heads.
Yeah, it's chaos. Like there's this, all this creativity, but nothing's getting done, right?
Yeah.
And again, like when you first start, you can get, you know, when you've got five or six people, you can see them all, right? You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, right? Everyone go.
Yeah.
Then when you get to 10 people, it starts to get a bit like there's too many people to direct here almost.
Yeah.
And then when you get to 15 or 16, right, that's definitely too many. And then you need to go, right, shit, we need to split into two or three teams. Right, you're going to be a manager. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a manager. Oh, but I need you to be a manager. Because we've got those but I don't want to take. So then that person leaves, right? Because you're not trying to get them to do something they want. And then you go, right, okay, we'll hire someone. Then you hire someone, and then they're not right. And, you know, so you've got all that turmoil that happens between 10, 20 people.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And then slowly but surely, you sort of find a few people that you think, right, they've got the same values, they believe, they see the vision, trust them, they're doing it. And then you get a sort of similar thing between 20 and 30 people, and it's just this constant, you know, you've constantly got to reinvent, and sometimes the people that are in the roles are not going to be the right for the next stage. And that's, it's a hard thing to deal with as well, because sometimes you need to hire above someone, and then how does that feel for the other person that's already in a role? So I've always tried to be my best at it, but that's, you know, but it's one of the toughest things. It's tricky, yeah.
And I do feel it's quite, like there's been people that I've worked with that are offered a management position and they're like, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's quite hard. It must be quite hard, especially when they're speaking to the board, right? And they're speaking, let's say they're speaking to you. They're like, oh, it's technically the boss, right? They don't want to let you down, but at the same time, it's a position that they don't maybe want to go into. And it's interesting because like a lot of the times directors and boards can see these promotions as promotions. Like you're getting a salary raise. This is going to be great for you. You're obviously going to want to do this. But a lot of people just are comfortable in their role. And they don't want to develop past that. They're quite set in their ways.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a lot of people are kind of like technicians. You kind of usually kind of think of them as. So there's people that have perfected their craft and they often get promoted because they're so good at their thing. Yeah. Like let's say a designer or whatever. They get sort of, and then suddenly there's no other designer. We need you to manage, but it's not for everyone. Some people should just be a specialist at the task, and that'll be their happiest thing for their head and their heart, and they'll kind of turn up, do a great job. But then if you can spot the people that should be leaders, you know, it's trying to put people in the right position for their makeup.
And it is like a never-ending kind of Rubik's Cube that you get one side and then the other's
And then it's like, it's all working. And then someone's like, I've been offered another job. I'm like,
How do you deal? That's a good thing. Like, not a good thing. That's a interesting point. There's, within the Chisholm Hunter, this happens as well, who are the sponsors of the podcast, but it's a very incestual business because jewelry knowledge is only applicable in a couple of different locations. So everyone kind of, you know, dips and dabs and goes elsewhere. How have you felt with competition of other creative agencies? Because it seems to me, especially over COVID, all of a sudden there was lots of creativities coming up. Like, have you had a lot of people trying to snatch your people?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you kind of handle that?
Yeah, again, it's one of these things I've learned to separate myself from. And I've learned to try and think in my head that when someone joins Made Brave, it's my job, whenever they decide to leave, to make them leave in a better position than they were when they started, right? So then that drives me to kind of give them a great experience. And then, it's hard because when you've got a successful business, other places go, let's pinch that person because we want to learn what's happening and how they're doing it. But usually it's not just the one person that's making the success, right? It's the collection together and whatever spark that's driving it or that's created it. I kind of really try to separate the both of those things. It's not easy, is it, right? Because, you know, no one likes the stress of, now I've got to fix that.
Yeah. Especially when you train someone up.
Yeah.
And then, like, I mean, listen, it's competition, it's business, but there's been instances where I've literally trained people up and it maybe takes like a year to properly engross someone in the business, and then they're like, oh well, you know, I'm just gonna hop, and they're paying me, you know, $2,000 extra, and the, you know, I want that set. But you've taught them everything, and you're like, oh my god, they're gonna leave with all that knowledge that I've taught them. Like, how do you trust select parties? Like, do you have a layer of management that you maybe trust more with that kind of information?
Yeah, well, I think you've got a leadership team, and you build out that leadership team, and you know, those people become really close, I suppose, in those roles. And yeah, I think it's just, I kind of talking before we were on camera, is like, when you're building a brand, you build a brand to attract great people, but also to repel people. And so, like, I try to cut off people that are not going to be great for Made Brave before they even get to me. Yeah. So, and that's why we're so vocal in growing a brand and not just doing just the work. The work's got to be great. And it's why I spend so much effort on that, because then if people aren't going to work in Made Brave and are going to do that type of thing in terms of come in for a minute and then jump out for a tiny bit of money, well, they're probably not right for me. And I want to repel them before they've even come in.
Yeah.
So the better you get is growing your brand, creating content, and showing what your culture is all about, hopefully these things happen less and less.
All right, everybody, we need to talk about Chisholm Hunter. Chisholm Hunter are the sponsors of the Into the Mind podcast, and without Chisholm Hunter, we would not be sitting here today. Chisholm Hunter are family-run jewelers that have been going for over 165 years. Now, they specialize, of course, in fine diamonds, and they're actually world-renowned for their fine diamonds, but they also have brilliant luxury watch brands from Tudor, Omega, Vacheron Constantin, Tag Heuer, Seiko, Tissot. The list goes on and on and on, and all my luxury watches that I buy and I get come from Chisholm Hunter. And while we're on the Chisholm Hunter website, type in the discount code CHSUB, that is CHSUB, for an exclusive 10% off selected lines. And this is my thank you to you guys. And on that note, let's get back to the podcast. And on the subject of content, there's so many different avenues now. I mean, you've got, or not Twitter, it's X, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, YouTube Shorts, LinkedIn, Facebook. I mean, I could keep going. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. What do you think for businesses are the most impactful social media channels to focus on when trying to grow their marketing reach?
Well, I think it's different for every business, because every business has got a kind of different mix. If you're talking about service-based businesses like mine, you know, again, it is kind of different for everyone. And I almost usually say to people, kind of try and concentrate on one thing first. Do it really well. So that could be TikTok in today's world, and it could be like showing off your culture in a really creative way. I find LinkedIn works brilliantly, but I've been in LinkedIn for years, and so and I've been super consistent. I'm there every single day consistently, and I've been doing it for years and years and years, and now loads of business comes to me via LinkedIn. Like this week alone, my inbox, because we just moved office, is full, and but it's because of that effort. So I think where most people fall down is they try stuff on TikTok. Oh, it's not working. Oh, I'll go to LinkedIn. Oh, I'll go to Reels. Oh, I'll go here. Whereas if you're just stuck at one thing, you know, so if it's a podcast, stick at that one thing, do it over and over and over, and it's, and the momentum starts to happen. Most people give up too early. Usually success is just around the corner. Like if you're on like 40 episodes here, you know, someone gives up just before they get to that moment, and it's just around the corner. So I think for anyone trying to figure out which one to go with, pick one, do it really well, and then move around.
And what part do you think, I kind of live in the same world as you do here, what part do you think consistency has in success on social media?
I think people think too much that people are watching all of the stuff that you put out, right? So you look again with all your episodes or all my content. In my head, I know all the things, all the pieces of content that I've put out, and you think, oh, they're going to be bored of hearing my story again, or they're going to be bored of this story that I'm telling. No, they're not, because they probably missed it. Because there's a million things, and if you've ever watched anyone scrolling on their phone, the speed that they scroll past, and they're probably watching Netflix at the same time as scrolling, and if you're like my son, he's got like an iPad playing Roblox, he's scrolling on his phone, he's playing Fortnite, and he's doing something, you know, so like our brains are so divided that, you know, turn up over and over and over and over and over and over, and you'll be bored as hell as your own story. Like I'm on here today, I've a lot of the stories I've told, you know, most of us as humans, we've only got a collection of stories that are true to us and, you know, that are sort of moments in our life. And, you know, every time you tell them, every time you talk about them, you learn to see them better. You learn what works, you learn what doesn't.
Yeah.
It also helps you solve your sort of think about your own thoughts and your own beliefs. And so, you know, most people get scared on social because they think, oh, I've said all that and I've now got nothing to say. Whereas you can pull stuff out.
Regurgitate it.
Yeah, you can pull stuff out. Mm. And another practical thing you can do is, if you don't know where to start with that, is, you know, if you turn up to Andrew Dobie on LinkedIn, you kind of almost want to, it's like turning on a TV channel to someone on social. You need to know what you're going to expect back.
Yeah.
So I talk about branding and creativity because it's obviously in my blood, right?
Yeah.
And it's my business as well, right? And
yeah,
if I talk about that as one content bucket, I'm going to get better at it. I'm going to become known for it. I talk about my entrepreneurial story because it's the only thing I've lived for the last 12 years, and I've got all these stories that I can, you know, tell. I talk about Finn, my son, family. I talk about leadership and culture because these are all things I want to be known for and all things that I want to get better at, and I don't move out my lane.
Yeah.
I stick there and I don't, so like every time you're going to post, I'm like, is it this, you know, and it helps me look for things. Whereas I think people try to jump on every trend, everything, every topic, stick in your lane, be known for something. And then if someone's wanting to talk to someone about creativity, they're going to come to me, not to, you know, someone that's talking about everything.
Yeah. Well, and that's essentially the way the algorithm works as well. You know, like if you... We have a Chisholm Hunter channel that reviews watches.
Yeah.
If I started reviewing cars, people would be like, the fuck are you doing? No, we're not going to watch that. And then your click-through rate drops, and that's essentially how the algorithm works. Do you think that... I know that through YouTube, like our average retention is up at like 4 or 5 minutes on YouTube, which is really good. Mm. Whereas on TikTok and Instagram Reels, I'm going to guess it's maybe 2 to 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that YouTube's a more effective over the long term, because it takes longer to grow, but do you think that YouTube's more of an effective marketing medium than the other two?
I would say people get really caught up, you know, looking at those analytics and going, oh, they've only watched this. I would say people are better spend their energy thinking about, how do I create something interesting?
Mm.
Because as soon as someone goes, yeah, no, it's only 2 or 3 seconds, or it's 6 seconds, or it's 7 seconds, someone else breaks it and has the most viewed 1 hour video by doing something like we were talking earlier, weren't we? We were talking about Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah.
If he went, no, podcasts only always work at 30 minutes, he would have never come up with a 3 hour format.
Yeah.
But he's now famed for the 3 hour format. So it's like, you know, this is something my MD Paul says, is just figure out something interesting and make sure you're doing interesting things, and then the time is irrelevant and people will find it. But if your rate is only, what was it he said, 4 minutes? Or 3 minutes?
I think
everyone's finished by now, so we're on our own now. Yeah. We can talk about whatever we want.
Yeah.
We're gone.
I find it interesting. I think that through working on all different avenues, like I built up my TikTok quite quickly in the early days of COVID because I was bored and I thought, why not have a TikTok channel, as many people did. So I built up that. Then I built up my own personal Instagram. Then I built up the YouTube channel. And the one that most people, it resonates with most people, seems to be the YouTube channel, because I feel like they have more of like a connection to the person, because it builds trust because they're watching them for longer.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you're on TikTok, fair enough, it's different if you're consistent and you're showing they're being seen every day.
Yeah.
But they might only watch you for 2 seconds and then they're not exactly going to like recognize you. Do you know
exactly
what I mean?
And I think that also on YouTube, you can sort of minimize it or whatever and stick it in the corner of the
exactly
thing, but you can't do that in TikTok. So they might just be listening to you
while
doing other stuff as well, which is probably why you're getting that, isn't it?
Yeah. I just find it quite interesting. I think that the social media landscape, especially with viral videos, and then how your channel can be kind of dropped after a viral video and then it can be taken back up. And you had a really interesting story about Will Smith. Do you want to divulge?
So like you, in the pandemic, we all downloaded, I think everyone in the country, in the world, downloaded TikTok. And so my son, Finn, he's 13 now, but he was, whatever age that would have been in the pandemic. How long ago was I blacked out for the pandemic? Yeah. So like
2 years that didn't exist.
Was that, 5 years ago now? 4 years ago? I don't know. 4 years ago. Yes. So we picked up TikTok and started playing with it just to have fun with him, just, you know, while all that stress was going on. I needed something creative. And I put a post out on LinkedIn and I said, me and Finn are on a mission. We're going to make ourselves TikTok famous. And we had like 3 followers or something. So I like doing that kind of stuff because then it makes you go, right, I better go and do this.
It's accountable.
I've told the world I'm going to do it. I better figure out how to do this. So me, Finn, and our dog Astro were the starting characters in our TikTok. Just literally random fun. If you look back in the feed, it's Entertaining Dad is the channel. We were just having fun together. And then did loads, then Finn got bored, I got bored, the world picked back up. And then one day, Finn was in the garden, he was doing a trick on his trampoline, and I watched it and I was like, wow, that was cool. And he swung onto this like pull-up bar that I've got, did a somersault, and I went, put it in reverse, and I was like, Finn, that's going to go so viral. And I think it got like, the first video got 14 million views on TikTok, and I was like, holy shit. And I don't think I'd ever managed to get that many views for any other brand ever. And I was like, we've got a narrow moment of time here. And
capitalize on it now.
To capitalize it. So one thing I did, it got like thousands of comments. I went in and I replied to every single comment. And replied to, I think, almost every comment with a question.
just to increase the engagement.
Right? So that fuels it, right?
Yeah.
And in the comments, I noticed a theme that they were either like, he's like a tiny Spider-Man, or they were arguing. People love to argue, right, on social media. And they were like, it's in reverse, it's not in reverse. So they were doing that, or they were saying that. Or there was another trend that was big at the time where people would do like random stuff one after the other.
Yeah.
And it was called Never Let Them Know Your Next Move. And so I went onto Amazon, bought a Spider-Man outfit, and I said, Finn, put the Spider-Man outfit on, we'll call the video, Never Let Them Know Your Next Move, and then do it in reverse again, etc. And we put it out, and it got 72 million views on Instagram, which was more than Kim Kardashian's most viewed reel that year. And I think the 8th most watched reel in the world.
Wow.
And so, like, we had a laugh with that, and it was great fun. And then we just started creating loads of different content.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, it's kind of weird because you have all those eyes, but I was like, I don't even know what our thing is. Maybe our thing's reverse videos.
Yeah.
And so we were doing loads of reverse videos. And then I was like, this is kind of boring. I don't know if we can do this forever. We tried stuff with sweets because Finn was young and sweets, tried all this kind of stuff. And then I realized that people liked watching the relationship between father and son.
Yeah.
And I realized that father-son duos were a thing. And I was like, this is cool because we can do this as a kind of bonding thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets me document our journey growing up. I can teach him all about creativity. I can teach him about business. Mm-hmm. And like felt like a win-win-win. So we started doing that, and then I'd had a really stressful time at work, and since the beginning of Made Brave, right, I'd been collecting Amex points.
Get
and I was like, we're going to the Maldives because I'm so stressed. So I'd booked this trip to the Maldives, and I needed a camera to go to the Maldives, and bought this Insta360 camera, and it's like it is the most creative tool I've ever used now. And I've been in photography for years and years and years, and this camera captures 360 everything. And when you post-produce, you can basically choose what you point at, and you can distort the image.
4K?
It's 4K to 6K now, 6K. Or 8K? Maybe 8K. The new one,
because it's the whole the sphere.
Then if you crop into it, it goes smaller and smaller, etc. Yeah. In terms of resonance, but it's brilliant. It's the best thing ever, and you put it on a huge selfie stick, and AI removes the stick, so it looks like you've got a drone following you when you don't. And I love this tool, right? So I took it there, and I think it was a combination of the two of us, the beautiful scenery. That's the dog, I guess. That wasn't us. I think the combination of like beautiful scenery, father son stuff, creative shoot, and then we started doing behind the scenes stuff. Like every video started to blow up, so they were getting like 5 million, 10 million, did all this on our feed, and I was like, wow. Insta360 reached out and said, like, we'd love to sponsor you. And I was like, yes, because I love this camera anyway.
Yeah, I use it anyway. So
I use it anyway. And I'm like, so I'm going to be the best ambassador for you, me and Finn, because we just love this thing. So they send us all these cameras now. And then they started paying us to create some content as well, which is always nice, right?
A little extra on the side.
Exactly. And then we started creating these. They're called, now this is the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. ASMR mukbang 360 videos.
So like sound.
Right, so you're like ASMR.
Yeah.
People speak like that.
Just creates a lot of people. It's
really creepy. So there's a whole ASMR trend in China, right?
Yeah.
You get all these videos where people eat stuff and all that.
Yeah.
And these 360 videos are like when it looks like you've filmed in a cup or something. It's like so weird. Go and look at our channel at Entertaining Dad. People will see it. And then like me and Finn would eat these sweets, right?
Yeah.
And I would be continuously tagging brands because I thought, well, then we'll get on their radar. And I thought that's quite a good demographic with me and Finn, you know, to get attention there. Anyway, it was World Chocolate Day and we had to do a video for World Chocolate Day. And so I went on Amazon and I bought like this massive tube of Nutella. And then I was like, what is the weirdest thing that we could eat with Nutella? And then I was like, Finn, what do you think? And he's like, Wotsits. Or like Cheetos if you're in America.
Yeah.
We bought some of them and then we did one of these ASMR mukbang 360 videos.
With that.
It's a sentence I never thought in my life that I would say. With that, and it like, I can't remember, I got like 1 million views.
Mm.
Insta360 reached out to me and said, Andrew, we'd love to use that video. Will Smith's going to react to it and recreate it. And I was like, Will Smith. And then literally, yeah, one day we woke up and on our feed was Will Smith had shared on his channel.
Yeah.
Him looking at our video, reacting to the video, and then doing the technique that we'd created. And we were like, what is the world?
Yeah, that is crazy. It's crazy how you can network with some of these like celebrities. You realize that they are just another person.
Yeah,
like,
and they're there on their feed and you can connect with them. And I think it's so powerful in that way that and then you know you get to one thing and then that creates the next best thing and
the thread goes on.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever spoken to these guys, like any
no
of
we never
lives?
Got I was like surely
yeah give me an interview.
he's going to come and speak because it's Finn and everything. Yeah. But no, we didn't manage to pull that off, unfortunately.
So. Yeah, well that's a testament to a lot. I get a lot from people. It's like should I focus on quality or quantity of content? Mm-hmm. Because as a photographer and videographer, you are like, I'm very OCD about everything because it needs to be perfect. But like a lot of the time, the things that go viral are not the perfect thing. They're the phone videos that people just whipping out their phone and filming a, you know, something silly. And that's what goes viral. And the one thing I had one that kind of rocketed the account and the same thing that happened to you. And essentially, I might show you it actually. essentially, my pal, we were in Iceland, and there's a place called the Black Sand Beach.
Yeah.
And when you're in Iceland on the Black Sand Beach, you get rogue waves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really like, they're actually pretty dangerous. You need to be very careful of them. And we got hit by a rogue wave. And so he was trying to take, I'll just show you it.
Show me.
So it's like videography, but it's bringing in an element of shit.
That's super cool.
But that got 9 million views.
9 million.
And whereas my last, the reels that I was posting before that were maybe scraping 500.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was like, holy shit, like what's happening here?
And did that change everything on the count from that moment or?
Most of it. Yeah. I think most of it. Are you, you're the same, I'm guessing. It just
I think as soon as you get that volume, isn't it? And then you just kind of try and sort of ride that momentum, ride the wave.
And did you find a kind of drop off when you stopped posting? Like, did you have a gap in posting or have you tried to remain very consistent on all channels with just posting every day?
Yeah, so I suppose I tried all these tactical things as well because I'm always interested kind of like what does work and what makes those algorithms work. But I try not to be a slave to it. But
yeah,
I'm interested as well, right? Because I do want to know what makes success. And so like I think early on we tried to start doing it every day, but then it's usually unmanageable, isn't it? Because it's like life gets in the way and all that stuff. So we sort of flipped it to let's just do good videos no matter how long it takes.
Yeah.
It's become a little bit harder now because Finn's now at high school and his time's taken up with different things. So I'm like grieving, my TikTok channel.
Yeah, my viral boy.
It's now going to be back to my channel on my own. So like I'll flip it into photography reviews or something. I don't know. Like, but yeah, I think the trick is to focus on quality rather than quantity.
Yeah.
But for me, like the behind the scenes always work way better. So I always try and encourage people, no matter what you're doing, if you're a photographer, don't just show the shine, show everything it took to get there. Half the ones on our channel that blew up the most are no matter what we're shooting, I just grab a couple of phones on tripods. You know, I don't worry about like the
quality
the quality of the it's a new word. The quality, I just make sure it's on because it's, you know, I think the rawness of real life, unedited, no color grade, nothing, is really appealing to people, and they go, "Oh, it's a normal person," and they like to laugh. And if you can laugh at yourself and get over that, you usually get the biggest hits there. And then you can use it to sell in whatever you want to sell in at a later date.
And do you structure, like, how do you, if a brand were to approach you and want help with their kind of social media campaigns or graphic design or whatever it would be, would you give them a structure in terms of how many times to post and where they should be posting, or like how would that work with you?
Well, usually with us, like we tend to work on bigger strategic projects for brands now.
Right.
So if you imagine, I think like the kind of projects we work on are, if there's like, we try and identify for business what is the business problem or the challenge or the opportunity that you're trying to solve, and sometimes that might be we're selling off a 500 person part of our business and we've got people leaving, and our job is to go in and create a brand and create a sense of belonging, create a belief, and use creativities to solve these kind of things. So sometimes it's up at that level. Sometimes it's tactical things. So it might be a brand saying, we're launching a new range or a new product. How would we do that? Yeah. And so it's not always default social media.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of people think, right, what do I post? But often the most successful things is to be able to make it easy for brands. Like when you're creating content, you need to know one big thing that brand stands for. And a lot of brands don't have it, right? And so before you get to anything tactical, we're always figuring out, does this brand actually know why they exist, what they are? And so every brand's kind of, we call it brand foundations, right? There's a purpose, there's a vision, there's a set of beliefs and values. And these all start to guide things that we do and the content that we create or that we don't create. And then we need, like, we call it an unstoppable idea, right? So there's an unstoppable, like, so if you imagine we've made bravery is the unstoppable idea behind everything. So there's an easy, when I go to start creating things, there's an easy link into whatever the, and then linking that with a challenge.
Yeah.
And then that starts to go, right, well, if we've got an unstoppable idea, we then need an unstoppable idea for this campaign, a campaign level. And then from there, if you've got that, then sometimes the answer might be do something physically, and then we're going to amplify it digitally. Or it might be something digitally, et cetera. So it's, you know, so I try stay away from just the tactical, we're going to post every day for you. We triangle it, what we're solving, then we figure out creatively how we're doing it, and that will dictate what we do, how many times we post, etc.
Yeah. Do you follow the guy that, I can't remember his name, it's so rid of me, Brewdog?
Uh-huh.
What's his name again? Annabelle, could you look that up for me? Is the CEO of Brewdog?
James Watt.
That's it, James Watt. I think he was on Stephen Bartlett's podcast, but some of the stuff that he did with marketing was so on the cusp, on the border, that it was genius. And in the interview with him, he was saying that essentially when you do marketing, it needs to be really, 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 really simplified, because otherwise people at 2 second glance, like TikTok, aren't going to know what they're looking at. He said he was in a campaign for he was promoting women's equality and women's rights, and he had something really subtle on the Brewdog can or something like that, and just it was too complicated, so nobody got it. So he said it was a really unsuccessful campaign. Whereas when he changed his legal name to Elvis? He changed his legal name to Elvis. All of a sudden it was this huge thing and everyone got involved. But I think when things get to director level, sometimes they can be overcomplicated for very little reason. Like I've brought stuff to the board before, and the first reaction is like, why would we do that? And then they start saying, oh, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you've got seven different things. And you're like, it's the idea's gone now. Uh-huh. How would you kind of like teach a company to operate, or not teach, but like what learnings could you offer a company of how to operate when doing marketing promotions? Yeah. Like, would you go along the lines of being quite simplified and stripped back, or how would you do that?
Right, so what you're describing is, right, so often, imagine you were setting off and you were the person who wanted to design a Porsche 911, right? You've got to have quite a clear vision in your head of what you're about to create. And if you go off into a room and you ask everyone, what would you need in a car? What would you like in a car? What do you like? Someone's going to say, it's got to look cool, right? Because I want it to look great. The other person's going to say, but I need it to be safe because I've got kids. I need it to have lots of fuel economy because I've not got much money. I want it to have big boot space, right? What have you just done? You just created a Volvo, right? And you were setting off to create a Porsche 911.
Yeah.
So sometimes people have a tendency to try and get everyone involved, and the best creative projects are the ones that have got clear direction, clear objectives, clear brief. You know, I'm setting off to create the world's best sports car, and then a clear vision and someone who can drive it through. Poor driver, but I mean that. Yeah, like once you've got that some one person with a clear vision, clear brief, clear objective of what you're actually trying to do, we've tried to codify this, right? Because it's sort of like, how do you make a successful idea and a successful campaign? This might not be perfect, but this is what I think are like some of the things you could almost like hunt for. So simplicity is one of the first things I always say. The best ideas do not need to be complex. And sometimes people almost feel like they need to work hard to get to a good idea. But often it's the most simple thing and it's right in front of you. And it should usually be based on an insight, a real human truth that you've spotted or you've paid attention to, right? Mm. So you've got simplicity. Second thing is it needs to solve a business problem or business challenge, right? Or a thing that you're trying to do. If it doesn't and you're just doing it for the sake of it, then that's probably not the right idea. So you can use that as a vetting process as well. Third of all, you need to connect emotionally with human beings, right? So make them laugh, make them cry, make them feel something, right? So if you can do those three things, the last one is how you activate it, how you create it or produce it, make sure it's irresistibly shareable. So make it super interesting, do something innovative, do something that no one's done before, you know, change the name of a can, change your name to Elvis or whatever, because that's the thing that's like, I can't believe that happened, but they've got an emotional connection. It actually solves this problem of selling cans, and it was a super simple idea. And so I've thought about this so much over the years that's what we try and do, like at our agency anyway. That's the kind of the lens we look through, and we think if it's doing that, it's doing that, it's doing that, and we can have someone that's got clear direction, you should be on to a winner.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen, but that, you know.
It makes sense. And I do think that there's obviously tons of positives to having a team, but sometimes that does happen. It's like, you know, if you do share an idea in its infancy, it becomes such a humongous project that you don't even want to do it anymore. So do you think that people should have the idea, do it themselves, and then hand it for sign-off once it's done? So that nobody has that negative impact on their idea.
Yeah, I think you just need to keep it as controlled as possible. Because when you get too many people and too many opinions, it just gets out of control, it gets unwieldy.
Yeah.
So it's like having those control constraints in place. Mm. You know, and it's kind of often the same with like when brands or when people grow businesses. Sometimes, like we talked about before, the success sometimes comes from that person's talent that started it. And I suppose it's the same when you're like creating a campaign or creating something successful. The spark usually comes from somewhere or someone or someone's idea, but then you've kind of got to try and build consensus around that. Mm. And so, you know, if you're trying to create something that goes viral, you need to start it, but then often it ends up in the minds of other people. So if you can build something that people are going to believe in and be part of, again, then you've got this other chance of virality or success.
Is there a secret sauce that you would say makes things go viral? Like, is there a secret flair that you can add to videos that make them go viral? I I remember I used to do this really stupid thing to increase engagement where I would spell something purposefully wrong, and everyone would be like, "They fucking Scottish," and then all of a sudden it would go viral because everyone would be like, and that's something that I would do to increase, especially on TikTok, that worked very well. But is there anything that you would say specifically?
Yeah, no, you're right with those things. Like, so the four things we spoke about are like definitely things that you want to aim to do for good content. But if you're looking for little tactical tricks like this, you're right. You do put a spelling mistake on something. You see people like putting a piece of tape on their cheek, you know, or they're holding a banana with their microphone, and it's just so that people go, are we not going to talk about the banana? Or why has that person got tape on their face? Or do you put stuff behind you in the camera, you know, like weird things? So those are all little tactical tricks that first of all get people talking. Then, like I said before, if you start to get that engagement, go in, create a conversation, ask a question. It gives you another piece of, you know, more and more momentum. What else? Show the bloopers. Show the end at the beginning. So give them the hook at the beginning and then reveal it to make them watch to the end. What else? There's more. There's other things.
There's hundreds of
things. There's all these little tricks. And if you can layer them all with good content but not make them feel overly tactical. You know, so it doesn't look gimmicky. I mean, it's exactly like if you watch a Mr. Beast video, it's he's using every single one of these techniques constantly, all the time. And it's like, he's the master in it. I watch, my son Finn watches Mr. Beast and he's watching it and he's entertained by it. I'm like, I see exactly that.
You can identify all the points he's done.
And so you almost want to entertain people. Right, you want to inspire them, so you want to make them feel like, oh, I could do that, right? I'm also entertained. You want to make them feel something and fight about something. I saw that, I don't know, they create an argument, and then I think so, entertain, inspire, feel something and argue.
I get a reaction.
And then,
I do think reactions are the best, the most successful kind of TikToks or Instagram reels or YouTube videos that we've had always incur some sort of argument. People just go at each other's throats and you just let it happen. Like you just leave it. It's not a bad thing to have negative comments, because negative comments normally lead to arguments. Is there anything, like, is there any such thing as negative engagement? I was always taught, or I was always of the belief, that any form of engagement, whether it be a like or dislike, isn't seen as a like or dislike, it's seen as engagement. So if you can get tons of dislikes, it would still go viral because it's this. Do you get what I mean?
I know what you mean. I suppose it's ultimately what your end goal is, right?
You piss people off, right?
Yeah, you don't want to, and you probably don't want to build your brand over the long term over people fighting in your comments. Like, you know, because then you become, I'm trying to think, what do you become? Do you become, is it like a lad Bible or like a, you know, these ones that just like they lead with a hook and it's just like, it's almost knowing what the end is in sight. And so, yes, some of these tactical little things work, but you need to have like almost like two speed branding, right? You need to have one eye on the long term of what you're trying to create. So if you're a jeweler, for example, right, you don't want to be just using these kind of techniques all the time purely just to get engagement, because you need to be growing value in terms of positioning and luxury and, you know, making sure that you're not the cheapest in the market and the right. So so if everything you've done feels like cheap tactics to create fights, is that going to make me think that's a, you know, a premium brand, right? So you're almost thinking, right, long term, that's what I'm trying to grow value in. So maybe that's not the way we show up. Maybe we show up in a different way.
Yeah.
Very mindful, very demure. Right? you know, like, so it's kind of, there's not one right for every single brand. You almost need to think strategically, where are we headed? But, you know, obviously as well, you're trying to drive sales month to month. So you need engagement, right? Because we want to get eyes on the brand. We want to drive them to an e-commerce site. And so you're trying to level out some of these things. So some things will just be building a brand. And it's how, you know, like how you come across in this is has an impact to that brand and how your personality is and the things that you say. And these won't always be things that convert tomorrow, but they might be growing in the mind of someone for the long term.
So how would you juggle the kind of like if it was a retailer, the kind of the more retail side of things versus the social media side of things? Like, do people, as soon as I plug, it feels really unnatural, and I feel like people won't click through just because I'm plugging.
Do you kind of get what I mean?
Do you think that it's still advisable to plug your website and plug your, you know, or would you just say, well, they're on your channel anyway, don't do it?
I think to ultimately know and drive what you should be doing, the company, any brand and every company has their values, right? And that's what's making you feel, I don't want to go over here because it doesn't feel right. And so most companies have four or five values, and these are like guiding, use them for guiding behaviors for everyone in the company. And again, like we spoke about before, we use them to attract people that are right for this brand and this business, team members, customers, everyone. And then this starts to guide the content you do, because if it doesn't align with these and you feel weird, then it's probably not right, and it's not going to grow value over the long time. Because what's going to happen is, yeah, you might catch someone, send them to your website using a cheap hook or a cheap thing, and then they get there and go, wait a minute, this company's all about value and luxury. And and then you're imagine it's like a human being. When we meet friends and our friends act differently, we go, something's not right with them. Something in our gut is telling us. So everything, every touch point has to be consistent. So if the brand's all about luxury, it's about value, it's about this, well, that's what has to be here. And that's the techniques that we have to use. And it might take longer than the guys that are using the quick hooks and the quick cheap stuff. But I'd imagine you're going to have a more successful long-term win doing that. We all have to sell, right? We all have wages to pay. We have, you know, rent to pay, or livelihoods and all that kind of stuff. So it's not to say that you can't sell. It's just, how do we do it? Where do we show up to do it? And which techniques do we pick that feel right for us? And it's maybe just that there's less of a hard sell. You know, I'm always a big believer that, you know, if people like you, if you get across the values and you're portraying the values of the brand and the team are, they'll find out what you do, and then the sale will come. And sometimes people are too quick to look for it tomorrow or right now. One of my biggest accounts came to me at my business in the middle of the pandemic. Everyone was phoning up and cancelling film shoots and campaigns, and I was like, oh my God, this is
I'm going to die.
What am I going to do here? Like, and I was like, at dinner with my friend, like tears in my eyes, like everything is going to go away. And I got a phone call from a business and they said, Andrew, we'd like you to pitch on a piece of business. And I was like, thank you, Lord. And I was like, how did you hear about us? And they said, I saw you talk 6 years ago, 6 years ago. And I loved what you said, your story resonated, the values, what your beliefs. And I've waited until the moment was right. And this is the moment was right. And that thing turned into like £1 million campaign for us.
Wow.
And that's the long game. And most people are looking for the game the next day. And I think, you know, what you're doing with a podcast, you know, this is a longer game, and it'll have a way bigger win than looking for the cheap techniques.
Yeah, that's great advice. And how did you, I suppose, a sensitive topic, how did you find the pandemic for business? Because I was in retail, so I was fucked.
Yeah, service-based businesses weren't too great. They're like, honestly the hardest time of my life, I think, in my whole... or my whole career, my whole working career, it was horrific. We had loads of film shoots, everything was cancel, and our pipeline of work just went like from, you know, up here to down here, and I literally didn't know what was going to happen. And that's the other thing, when you run a business, right, you can't just go, oh well, leave, right? Because you've got all your wages there, you've got all your costs, all the other stuff. But again, these are the times in business when you lean into the values, when you lean into the beliefs that you've created. And it was actually my creative director. So like, we've got a kind of guiding purpose at Made Brave, and it's to inspire creativity in everyone we come across, right? So if I do my job today, hopefully I've inspired something on here for someone that listens somewhere. And he said, Andrew, right? Because I was like panic mode and, you know, flight or fight mode was kicked in completely. I was like paralyzed. He's like, our purpose is to inspire creativity, so let's fucking go out and inspire people. So we went out on LinkedIn, and I said to the creative community, I said, look, I'm struggling with this. I don't know how to deal with this, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to create a place for the creative community to join together.
Yeah.
Let's figure this out. And I created a group on LinkedIn, and 4,000 people joined it.
Oh my God.
In like 2 weeks' time. Yeah. And this, I was like, shit. But it gave me the biggest bolt of adrenaline in my arm. And I've like... right, I've got to lead 4,000 people now. I'm not just leading me and my team. And I then said, I'm going to turn up every day and I'm going to do free mentorship to anyone in the like freelance community, creative community that needs and wants it. Now, I was needing mentorship, yeah. right? yeah. But you know what? It gave me some purpose to help them. Yeah. And then because you had all that momentum, all those conversations, stuff started coming back to me. And, yeah. you know, and I wasn't necessarily doing it to be selfish, to ask for it back. But I think if you give, and it's why I always give on these chats, I tell yeah. everything, it comes back tenfold. And so I think, yeah, that's why you figure out your brand values. That's why you figure out your purpose. That's why you figure out the big idea, because these are all tools in your brand toolkit that when shit gets hard, I'm now going to lean into that. I'm going to lean into that one. But we don't always use them at the same time. We use them at different times to help us along the way.
Yeah. 4,000 people.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy.
Uh-huh.
That is crazy. Through LinkedIn as well.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize LinkedIn.
I love LinkedIn.
Does it uh-huh. do well for you?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I was on their like creative influencer program or something, creator program or something a couple of years ago. And it's they're good. I don't know. It's just like, it works for me. It works really well.
I've seen recently, it was actually literally yesterday, they're starting to introduce short form video.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, do we need another TikTok?
No, you do, because go in now.
Yeah,
go viral now. Take your content here and do it, because there's such a low use of that type of video for business stuff on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
and you've got 40 episodes.
Yeah,
chop them up and start serving them, and you will rise to the top so quickly.
Because we've done you know, I think you're maybe episode 42, but we've got like so much backlog. Mm-hmm. stuff of like shorts that we've used at the very start that maybe mm-hmm. didn't do as well because it was the very start. So you think just repurpose it?
Well, there's a supply and demand issue, right? Because they've got no supply of that content, and now everyone's going to have the feature on their feed. So whatever small amount of content, it's why when you go on just now, right? When I'm on my feed, it's only American content that I'm seeing or generally like the majority, because there's obviously more content there. And there's a lack of it in the UK, so that's getting served here. So if you turn up in the UK, they're going to serve you to everyone in the UK, I think.
I'm going to walk away from this and post like eight shorts all tonight. Uh-huh. One thing I've struggled with, I wanted to ask you about this, is I've kind of been locked in I find it difficult being put in a building your own prison, so to speak. Like,
I did start with that.
it's a terrible analogy, but like, not just me. Anybody that has kind of a niche and builds a following get put in the box of they are that person and that's all they do. Mm-hmm. And to an extent, you kind of need to do that because the algorithm thinks you are. Let's pretend you review cameras.
Yeah.
You are the guy that reviews cameras, so anything other than a camera that you do, you will be kind of, it's just not going to be appropriate for your channel. Mm-hmm. It'll do shit. So what I did is I kind of have various different channels.
Yeah.
But like, I don't, on my personal Instagram, that my photography one, do you think that I should just, or on my personal pages, just post literally what I want, and that builds my own personal brand? Does that kind of make sense? Because at the moment I'm doing all my photography and video stuff because that's what they know and expect.
Yeah.
But there is stuff that I like outside of that.
Yeah.
But I'm juggling three different channels.
Yeah.
All for the same.
Sounds too much.
Yeah.
Sounds unsustainable.
Yeah. Three different channels. Then you got TikTok. Then you got YouTube.
Can we have a wee lie down here? Right. So it's back to those content buckets before. It's okay to have more. You know, like, just be you. Because like, if the part of you is that travel stuff, and you're passionate about it, and the content you show them is amazing, right? Layer that with the photography stuff that you want to do, and layer it with whatever else. The trick is to, one of those things will be a hero.
Yeah.
Like for me, branding and creativity. I want to be, you know, known, respected for creativity and branding. So when people think of that, but to do it effectively, I need to tell human stories, which is why I do the entrepreneurial story, and I need to, you know, be relatable, which is why, you know, sharing stuff about me and Finn, and that's also like for me a memory bank, so it's a win for me. So like, so it's okay. That's like, it's just like, you just need to decide which one is the hero, which are my other layers, and then you'll start to feel more fulfilled, right? Because you're like, it's really me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll start to work because the people that like the photography stuff will actually want to see the life stuff of you, because that's interesting to them, and they've started to like you because they respect the content that you're doing. So you're giving them what they want. without having to make them jump on channels. It's easier for you because you've just made it more sustainable and it should self-fulfill.
Yeah. I do think that it's getting to the point now where it's like, you know, I've got six different Instagram channels that I'm part of, six different on TikTok, and then you've got three different YouTube channels, and then you've got, it's just like, this is bizarre. Like,
that's too much.
I just like, it's, but then it's also a great idea. It's like, oh, well, we've got the Into the Mind podcast. Well, we should bring out an Into the Mind clips because it's, you're repurposing the same content, right? And that encourages people to go, and then you need an Into the Mind page on Instagram, and then you need an Into the Mind page on TikTok. And then it's like, oh yeah, it'd be good to have them all coming through the same page because it just makes it easier for people. But I'm not sure if I post something to do with the podcast on my personal channel, if people watch it because it's a podcast and not.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think you can almost only figure out your own little ecosystem to know what's right, because I think it is different for everyone. I got to visit Gary V's office. And
did you meet Gary V?
The day I was in, right, he was like stuck in a meeting, and I was like, I was like, I'll just take a picture. And then someone like moved in front of his head, and I was like, right. No, but I'm like, I'm friends with his chief head of heart, Claude Vayner, right? So she gave me a tour around VaynerMedia in New York, and he's got like 30 people in that machine just for his personal brand.
Really?
Yeah, just to run that Gary V machine. And that's not the agency's brand, the agency team, the agency marketing team, etc. That's his.
Oh my God.
So, what I've seen from all the sort of successful personal brands is they usually have teams behind them, you know, supporting, because there's so much to do. Like what you just said, that's unmanageable, right? And that's going to melt your brain.
Trust me.
But it's always hard, isn't it? Because it's like, well, not everyone can afford to build the team behind them and do that. You know, I've got a team helping and supporting me because there's so much to do that it's unmanageable for me. And if I was just spending the time doing it, you know, I wouldn't be able to do everything else running a business. But I think you just got to find the right process for you. Like everything that goes out under my name still comes through me, you know, and it's either come from things I've said, it's been, you know, edited and then, you know, checked and done with me, etc. But it's kind of, you've got to try and find a system that works, but it's so much easier now with AI, etc. You know, we were talking about, you know, different tools for editing that can make things easier if you don't have money, if you don't have a team.
Autopod has saved my life.
Yeah.
like you have no idea.
I'm literally going home and try that. Yeah. But like, even for like people again listening who can't find that scale or that effort, ChatGPT is like so powerful. And I don't mean to use it in like a super basic way, but like I'm so into ChatGPT for so many tasks now that you know, you can do things like with ChatGPT, and this is what I'd encourage people to do if they don't know what content to create as well, is ChatGPT. Give me 100 questions to ask an entrepreneur who runs a creative branding agency, right? 100 questions. Get your friend, like we're doing here, get them to sit and go through those questions, record it, transcribe it, right? So then take that transcription, chuck it back into ChatGPT. Hear me answering 100 of these questions. So create a style guide for my tone of voice, my personality, and my writing style. Give me coded guides for that. Take that, put it into the settings of ChatGPT, then ChatGPT knows how to write like you in the style that you say. Then in that channel, say, based on what I spoke about before, give me compelling ways to tell these stories in better ways. You know, ask me, you know, and you could just self-fulfill like that. If you can't afford a team, a thing, if, you know, if that was, that's how I would do it if I was someone sitting today, and that subscription is 20 quid a month. Yeah. And that's like hiring a team, you know.
The brain power of a team.
And so there's so many hacks you can do today in today's world to kind of get that. But yeah, I think the trick with all of this stuff and building personal brands and creating content is just turn up constantly and consistently and just figure out what you want to be known for. But don't be afraid to be human and share your true like
insecurities.
We all get stuff wrong. I get stuff wrong all the time. You know. None of us know what we're doing. Like, I've got imposter syndrome every single day. Sitting here today, I'm like, why the fuck does someone want to sit and talk to me? You know, it's just like, but the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with yourself, the more you know yourself, the more you start to know your values, that dictates the content, and then the whole thing should hopefully not fall down.
How did you find your podcast? I know you're going to revitalize that soon, but how have you found the long form kind of structure.
Yeah, no, I love it. I like, it's the best hack in the world, isn't it? Yeah. It's like you get the chance to reach out to the people that you admire, people that you want to chat to. Like mine's a branding and creativity podcast. It's called Just a Chat With. And so I get to reach out to people, say like, you are the best of the class in yeah. this. Can I chat to you? They're like, yeah, of course. I want to be positioned as best in class. You just chat and it helps you think about your own thoughts.
It's like therapy.
And then like a little bit of their magic rubs off on you.
Yeah.
And you remember two or three things that they said. And yeah, you're right. It's like therapy. You start to go, right, take that. That's now one of my stories that's in my brain. They become a friend. You get a network. And it just like, it's just one of the coolest hacks. But it's just, again, it's consistency. I've done similar to you. I think I'm on like 34, 35. I stopped because I had a challenging moment in business. And I just could not get my brain to do it. I was like...
You'd be stressed about other stuff.
I was stressed about other things. And so my focus had to stop for a moment. I've now solved all those problems, thankfully. And I'm feeling like back to myself. And I, like, so I'm just about to kick it off.
Yeah.
I'm about to get like one of the heads of creative from Liquid Death. I don't know if you've come across that brand. It's good. Go and check out Liquid Death. So I've got their head of creative coming on. I've got the head of creative from booking.com. I've got like four or five brilliant guests lined up. And yeah, like I think of it like therapy. I think of it like self-learning. But it takes time, doesn't it?
It takes time, but it's a really good way of backlogging. Because at the moment, I'm not sure what your schedule was like, but I'm posting once every Sunday. We will upload like up that soon, but at the moment that's sustainable because I'm also posting like three videos in Chisholm Hunter and I'm filming backlogs for other brands and this other stuff. But the what I like about podcasts is like, there's no, if you get someone with a different opinion to you, you discuss your opinion and you come to common ground.
Yes.
There's none of this social media, well, you're a fucking idiot. Like, it's just you come to common ground, and that should be what a conversation does.
Yeah.
Also, you can get tons of shorts out of it for very little, which is great because that always helps.
Yeah.
And there's an AI too, I'll show you actually. It's called, what's it called? Opus AI.
I was going to say it. Yeah, you got that's it. The one that's in the back of my head. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
cool,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Great.
Yeah. Just chops them all up, doesn't it? Into kind of like.
Yeah, to shorts. Uh-huh. And like, fair enough. Some of them are a bit, but like, maybe you get five or six for virtually nothing that are good, and then you just consistently upload. It's wild. What do you think has been the biggest lesson you've learned over your career so far?
God, that was a deep question, right? All the back of that.
Feels, wasn't it?
Biggest thing I've learned. I think just like you're more talented than you think you are. Most people sitting jobs, not putting themselves out of their comfort zone, not doing things, not trying stuff, not going places, not pushing themselves onto podcasts. Most people have got like some magic in them, but they don't give themselves the opportunity to try it. So I think for anyone listening, like, be brave, push yourself out of your comfort zone, do something. You know, we've all got magic in us. We've all got our own unique USP. And I think my younger self didn't have that confidence. And I would have, like, I only started my business when I was 30. So you're also not too late. I wish I'd known that earlier. I wish I'd known what I was capable of and all these things that I could do, because I remember sitting thinking, like to work in a cool agency, but I don't think anyone would employ me. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? How does that get into your head? And now that I've like had a chance to travel around the world, I'm so fortunate in my job. I travel so many places, and I'm like, people are just the same as you and me wherever we go. And I've been in boardrooms in New York, boardrooms in Singapore, etc. And everyone's got imposter syndrome. Everyone's thinking I shouldn't be here. So I think the sooner you can kind of push yourself and do something, you're definitely more talented than you think.
Amazing. Well, good advice. Well, listen, thank you so much. Where can people find you if they're looking for you?
Well, they can get me on LinkedIn, definitely. And then most platforms, I'm at Dobie Andrew, or if you want to find Made Brave, it's just at Made Brave. And then if you want the silly stuff, that's Entertaining Dad or Entertaining_Dad on Instagram, because that was gone by the time I got to it. So
yeah, I tried to get Harrison Brown, and there's an American guy, and I've messaged him 20 times and Instagram stopped me messaging him because I keep being like, I will buy your username off you. I will give you a grand, just please. Like, and he's not posted in 2 years or something. And he views them all. And I'm like, oh, God damn
give
it.
Give me the channel, yeah.
Yeah, so bad. But listen, thank you so much, mate. I really appreciate your time and coming in and talking to me.
Oh, thanks for having me. Loved it.